We begin the current daven. Let's get in daven and tes. We begin on the bottom line of daven and ches and beis, where the Gemara continues quoting a statement that was mentioned in the previous daf and continues in a related discussion. That is, we had mentioned that there were many different levels in this halacha of sikukin, which originally the halacha was, as mentioned in our Mishnah, Rishayna, if someone bought the land from the sikukin, that's the non-Jew that was going to kill a Jew, and the Jew said, "Don't kill me, just saw karka, take my land and leave me alone." And then another Jew buys from that sikrukin. And then he goes and goes to the original owner and says, "You know, I want to buy from you too." The halacha was mekach, that mekach batal. It's not a valid sale because the guy could say, "I didn't really want to sell it to you. I really wanted my field back. But I don't want to contend with that non-Jew. So I said, okay, I'll sell it to you and then I'll deal with you. But I really didn't want to sell it." So the sale would be void and the guy who had given the money to the sikrukin would have lost his money. Then there was a Mishnah Achreina that said that no, that when the Jew buys from the sikrukin, he could hold on to it. He just has to give a quarter of the value, as we explained in the previous stuff, how to evaluate that quarter, to the original Jewish owner, because that's how much he saved when he bought from the sikrukin. But if the original owner has enough money, he's the first to go ahead and buy it back. And that is then what later Rebbe had convened a court, and they decided that if he didn't redeem it for 12 months from that sikrukin, the original owner, then another Jew could come ahead and buy, but again, he still has to give a quarter of that value to the original owner. Now, that is why Gemara continues and says, "Amar Rav." Rav said, as we continue on top of Netzes and Aleph, "Ano have b'minyan de bei Rebbe." I was from that number of the members of that court when they were misakin this concept, where although generally we let the original owner go first, but if it's after 12 months and he didn't redeem it, then kolakoydim likach zacha, whoever comes first could merit and could keep it if he buys it from the sikrukin, again, just giving a quarter to the original owner. So he says, "I was amongst the members of that court." And actually, I was the first one to be counted when they were voting yay or nay regarding this takana. They had started from me first when they were going down the row of the dayanim. They asked me first what I thought, which again, as Rashi says, either the chiddush in this is that Rav was actually one of the intermediate members of Rebbe Yehuda Anasi's court, not from the greatest and not from the smallest. But Rashi says he heard that actually that Rav was the lowest member in standing of that court. But either way, the Gemara asks, but Bo'anan Tanan, but we learned the Mishnah Masechet Sanhedrin that says as follows. Dini Mamanis, which was what this Nimna, what this court was deciding on at that point, which was a monetary law regarding the buying of the field from the Sikrukin. So regarding monetary law, about Taharis Vatumas, regarding purification and richly impure halachas, Maschilim in Hagadol. There the halacha is that you begin when you start counting the members of the court regarding their decision of the votes, you start from the greatest member of the court to see, and we're counting to see if the majority of them think that it's Tameh or Tahar, so you start from the greatest. V'din in Nefashas, Maschilim in Atzad. However, when it comes to capital punishment, then you start from the lowest standing member of the court, not from the greatest. The reason being is because if the greatest member of the court is going to go first, and he's going to say he thinks that he's liable for a death penalty, then the other members of the court are going to be submissive to the greatest member, and they're not going to argue in him. The reason being because the pasuk says in Shemayis Chav Gimel, Leisana al Riv, that one should not respond regarding contending. Now, although it's Riv, but the way it's pronounced is al Rav, on the greatest member of that court, where that pasuk is talking about regarding Din Nefashis, as the Gemara explains in the beginning of Masechta Sanhedrin, and therefore they're not going to learn any merit on the person, so we don't want to start with the greatest, because then no one's going to disagree with him, and therefore you start from the lowest, and then you go up to the top. But that's by capital punishment. But by Din Mamanis, you start from the Gadol. So the question is, how could Rav said, when it came to this halacha in Rebbe's court, he went first, but the Mishnah Sanhedrin says that when it comes to Din Mamanis, you start from the Gadol, not from the cotton. So Amar Rabbi Bered Rav, he says, and Vitim, as some say, was Reb Hillel Bered Reb Valas, Shani Minyana de Bei Rebbe. When they would vote in the court of Rebbe, there it was different. The Kula Minyanahu Minatzad Hava Maschilin. But all their votes, no matter what the subject matter was, they would always start from the lowest member of the court. And because when it says in the Pasuk, Leisan Al Riv, again, which the way it's written is missing a Yud, so it could be pronounced Leisan Al Rav, which that's the drusha that we make, which means don't argue on the greatest member that's standing in the court, in Rebbe Yehuda Anasi's court, they didn't explain that at the beginning of the Pasuk, which is these words that we're quoting, was Toma Bedin Nefashis. Meaning, although as the Gemara Sanhedrin explains, the end of the Pasuk obviously is Toma Din Nefashis, and that's why they learned that the Halacha B'Lisana Al Rav is only by Din Nefashis, so that's why there is where you start Min HaTzad. But by other Halachas you start Min HaGadol, by Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, they actually disagreed, and they held that that Halacha B'Lisana Al Rav goes on all different types of Halachas. Even by the Halacha of Din Imamunis, that's why you always start Min HaTzad from the lowest standing member. Or Taisa actually gives a different interpretation. He says the reason why by the court of Rebbe they start Min HaTzad from the lowest member is because Rebbe Yehuda's humility. He didn't want to show that he's the greatest and he's going to be the one that's voting first. So that's why in all situations they would vote from the lowest one. Therefore, there's no difficulty. Although Rav was not the greatest member of Rebbe Yehuda Anasi's court, even though it's Din Nemamanis, they started in Rebbe Yehuda Anasi's court in all ways, not like the Mishnah Masechta Sanhedrin, from the lowest member of the court. Now another teaching from V'Amar Rabba Bered Rava, V'Itema, and some say again Reb Hill Bered Ravalis, which also relates to Rebbe, Mi Mois Moshe V'Ad Rebbe, from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu until Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, who was the one that put together all the Mishnayos, L'Mitzinu Torah Gedula B'Makam Echad, never found that there should be Torah and greatness in one place. In other words, that the Torah of the Jewish people and the greatness of the Jewish people will only be in that one place. In other words, that there is no one in the Jewish people that's greater than that person, both in Torah or in wealth. And that is Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest in Torah and in wealth, and so Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi was the greatest in Torah and in wealth at that time. Now the Gemara asks, "Well, is that true? And from Moshe Rabbeinu until Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, there was no one that had that characteristic? But Hohava Yeshua, but there was Yeshua ben Nun, who was also the leader and therefore wealthy, and he was also the greatest Talmudic scholar." So the Gemara says, no, Hava Lazar. There was a Lazar ben Aaron HaKayin, who was also great in these areas. So he wasn't the only one. But the Gemara asks, okay, so Hava Lazar, but he was then the only one standing after Yeshua's Nifter. So a Lazar was a person that, he was the only one that had Torah Gedula at some point. So the Gemara says, no, because Hava Penchas, there was still Penchas. But the Gemara says, okay, but Vahava Penchas. But after Elazar passed away, then Torah Gedula was by Penchas, because he was a Kohen Gadol after his father, so he had Gedula, and he was also the leader in Torah. So the Gemara says, no, Hava Zakenim. They were the elders that received the Torah from Yeshua, and they lived long after this period. As the Pasuk says in Yeshua Chavdalad, Asher Haricha Yamach Yeshua, they lived a long time after Yeshua. So, although there was Pinchas, but there was a Zekanim, so he's not the only one that to have Torah Gedula. But the Gemara asks, okay, so fine, Hohava Shaul. There was Shaul HaMelech, who was obviously wealthy as the king, and he was also great in learning. The only thing was, as the Gemara explains in Erev and Dafnan Gimel and Alpha, is just that he didn't teach others. He wasn't like the Gemara there says, Goli Masechta. That's why it says, B'chol HaShayefne Rishia, wherever he went, he had this wickedness, but in regarding to learning itself, Torah for himself, He was an unbelievable Talmud Chacham. So he had Torah Gedula B'Makom Echad. So the Gemara says, no, Hava Shmuel. He wasn't the only one. There was Shmuel HaNavi. But the Gemara says, okay, although there was Shmuel, but B'Hanach Navshe, but Shmuel passed away before Shaul. So after Shmuel passed away, then Shaul was a person that had Torah Gedula B'Makom Echad. He was the only one. So the Gemara answers, Kula Shnei Kamrina. This halacha that we were saying that we didn't have from Moshe Rabbeinu to Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, Torah Gedula B'Makom Echad, means from when the person came to a position of gedula, of greatness, that he had Torah Gedula B'Makom Echad, that in all those years, he was the only one. From that moment when he became great, there was no one else that had Torah like him, and that wasn't the case by Shaul, because although he had Torah Gedula B'Makom Echad, but when he was already gadol, there was someone else that had Torah, who not just him, which was Shmuel. So the Gemara says, but Vahava David. There was David who had Torah Gedula B'Makom Echad. So the Gemara says, Habi Ir HaYeiri, who was also great in learning. As the Gemara says in Moed Katan, Daf Tazayin Mabeis, that he would teach to the Rabbanon on top of cushions, and David HaMelech would be sitting on the floor. So David was not the only one that had Torah. But the Gemara says, but Vahanach Nafshei, but he passed away. And after he passed away, David was the only one that had Torah Gedula. So the Gemara again answers, Kulish Nebinim, but we need this concept to say that this person had Torah Gedula B'Makom Echad, which was Moshe Rabbeinu until Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi. These individuals like David didn't have it the whole entire time that he was the Melech to have the only one Torah Gedula B'Makom Echad. So the Gemara says, Hohava Shlema, but there was Shlema HaMelech who had both. The Gemara says, Hava Shimon ben Gera, but there was Shimon ben Gera, who was also a great Talmud Chacham. So the Gemara says, but Vakatli, but he killed him. Again, the Gemara says, Kula Shnei Kamrinan. But Shlomo Melech didn't have all the years being the only one with Torah as he had his Gedula, because during some of that period, there was Shemi Ben Ger. The Gemara says, okay, Bohava Chizkiah. There was Chizkiah, the king of Yehuda, who was a Gadol in Torah, as the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Tzadid Adam and Beis, and he was the king, he had Gedula. The Gemara says, but Hava Shebna. Shebna was even greater in some level in learning. As the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Chavav Med Aleph, that Shebna would teach to 13,000 myriads, and Chizkiah would only teach to 11 myriads. Now, so the Gemara says, but Hohektel, but Sancheiv killed him, as the Gemara says in over there in Perek Zebair. So the Gemara says, again, Kulish Nekarmina, but we're talking about someone that his whole entire Gedula, he was the only one that had Tyra, which was not the case by Chizkiah, because part of that time, there was Shebna. But the Gemara asked, Vahava Ezra. There was Ezra HaSefer, who was well known. He had Tyra and he had Gedula. So the Gemara says, Vahava Nechemi Ben Chachalia, who was the other one, the great person at his time, who had Gedula. Therefore, he wasn't the only one that had Gedula. Now, the Gemara says, Amr V'acha B'rei D'Rava, he says, Afani Yomer, he says, I also say, I'll continue that teaching, which was from Moshe Ben until Rebbe, there was no one that had Tar Gedula B'akam Echad, says, I'll continue that, Mimais Rebbe V'ad Rav Ashi, from Rebbe until Rav Ashi, who again, Moshe Rabbeinu was the one that gave us the Torah Shebiksav on some level, the whole Torah. But then the next level was the Mishnayis, which was given to us by Rebbe. Then Rav Ashi was the one who gave us the Gemara. So he says, from Rebbe till Rav Ashi, L'mitzina Torah Gedula Malkam Echad, we don't find anyone having Torah and Gedula in one place. So the Gemara said, but not, for Hava Huna Bar Nasan. But it was Huna Bar Nasan who, as Tesis says from the Gemara Ma'id Kot and Chav Chesem Adav, had Torah and Gedula Malkam Echad. So the Gemara says, Shani Huna Bar Nasan, the Mechav HaVakayif Leil Rav Ashi, that although he was around, he was subservient to Rav Ashi, and therefore he's not considered as having Torah Gedula Malkam Echad, and the only one that had the Torah Gedula Malkam Echad was Rav Ashi. Nothing more continues in the next Mishnah, can continue the theme of the previous Mishnahs, discussing this concept of Tikkun Olam, different takanas that were instituted as a way of having things work in an effective way. So the Mishnah says, Cheresh Roimis, a deaf-mute person who obviously is limited in his communication and wouldn't be able to do certain kinyanim. However, the Mishnah tells us that he could gesture, he can allude to certain things, and what he gestures will have validity. And v'nirmaz, he can be gestured too. In other words, if someone gestures to him with like sign language and he's willing, so that will be valid. So as Rashi explains, what he means with remez means either with the hands or with the head, some type of bodily gesture. Now, Ben Beseir, I mean, he argues, he says, that even kaifetz v'nikpatz, which is if one is mouthing, if he mouths the words, which is by bending his lips, which is not even as visible and as recognizable and significant as remiza, as gesturing, even that is going to be valid for this halacha. But it's b'metaltlin. This is only if he's selling movable items, but for things like karka, there we didn't institute this tikkun olam. It's only for things that are necessary for him to be able to survive. So because he's a deaf mute, he's not going to be able to do anything. So that we say that he could. So either it's that he has to gesture, or he could even just mouth the words. But again, it's limited to metalton. Then the Mishnah says, Hapuhutais, young children, mekhon mekech umemkorin memker. What they buy is a purchase. What they sell is a sale. But metalton, again, that's limited to movable items. And again, this is for the tikkun olam of the world. Now, the Gemara explains, Amar Rav Nachman, he qualifies the halacha of our Mishnah that machlekes b'metatlin. The whole machlekes that we had regarding do you need remiza or is it enough with kaifetz, that's only by movable items. Aval begitten, but by a divorce document, which as the Gemara tells us in Yevamos Kuf Yud Beis Amud Beis, that if a cheresh married a woman after he was already a deaf mute, so if he wants to divorce her, he could divorce her, because just like he could, although generally that's a limitation, but since he married with gesturing, so that's the same qualification for the divorce, would also be by gesturing, meaning it's a problem if he married her when he was not a deaf-mute, a pekech, and then he became a cheresh, that would be a problem, but just like he married her by gesturing, he could divorce her with gesturing. So that's what Rav Nachman's saying, that the whole machlik is it enough with kaifetz, with mouthing, or do you need gesturing? That's by metal. But by gittin, divrei kol b'remiza, there everyone holds that you need gesturing, it's not enough with just mouthing the words. Now the Gemara asks, Pshita, obvious, what's Rav Nachman teaching us? B'metatlin tanan. The Mishnah taught us in the statement, and this is Rashi's opinion, in the statement of Ben Beseris specifically, that it's limited to metatlin. So obviously, if If he's being lenient, Ben Beseri, regarding mouthing the words, he says it's only by Metatlin. So obviously something else requires a higher level, which would be for Remiza, and you have to gesture. So we know obviously that by Gittin, you would need gesturing. So what is Rav Nachman teaching us? So the Gemara says, no, Mao de Tema, we would have thought to say without Rav Nachman that, yes, although Ben Beseri mentioned Metatlin, is because he's actually telling you a chiddush at Af Ben Metatlin, that the halacha applies even by Metatlin, and that it's a kol shekin, that for sure it would work by Gittin, that you only need to mouth the words. In other words, why is that a chiddush? What would that be the understanding without Rav Nachman that is telling you that even by Metatlin? Because we would have thought maybe that actually Gittin is more lenient. Why? Because as we said, however you married her, that's how you need to divorce her. Now maybe you would think that it's enough for the tikkun olam of a cheresh to get married rabbinically to a woman by with kvitza, which is mouthing the words to her. And therefore, if he engaged her by kvitza, by mouthing the words, so then he could disengage, he can leave that relationship by mouthing the words too. But we would actually have thought that metatlin, that falls from an inheritance, there that's something that's a higher standing, that wouldn't be enough to just do kvitza. Maybe that you would need gesturing. In other words, something like, let's say he bought it like that, maybe, but let's say something metatlin, which are things that could be a biblical type of a standing that he inherited, maybe it wouldn't be enough with mouthing the words. Maybe Ben Meseri would have agreed to the Tanna Kamma that you need a gesture. That's why Ben Meseri said that he qualified it for metatlin, to tell you that it even works for metatlin. So that's what we would have thought. Kamash Mulan, that's where Rav Nachman is coming to teach us that no, Ben Meseri specifically and only said the case by metatlin, but it actually would not work by Gittin. By Gittin, it is more stringent, and it's not enough with just mouthing the words. You have to go ahead and gesture. Now, however, regarding karkois, regarding land, as we alluded to in the Mishnah, there it wouldn't be enough, not with mouthing, not even with gesturing. And again, because as the Gemara will later on explain, regarding when it talks about by children, the reason why they made this tikkun olam was because what's called kedei chayiv, just so that the person should survive. You have a deaf-mute person. If no one's taking care of him, how is he going to survive if he can't do things? He can't talk. He can't do other things that other people could. That's what we're saying. So kedei chayiv, we allowed it by metatlin, but not by karka at all. And by gittin, that you would require the high level of remiza. That's one version. Ikadami, that those that say a different version, that Amr of Nachman, he actually says, kemachlikis b'metatlin, kach machlikis b'gittin. That just like they argue by metatlin in our Mishnah, that do you need gesturing or is it enough with just mouthing the words? That's the same machlikis that they have regarding gittin. We've been mesei word hold, it would be enough to mouth the words. On that, the Gemara asks, "Banam b'metatlin t'nam." But our Mishnah tells us by Ben Meseri that he only makes this leniency by metatlin. That the Gemara says, "Ema af b'metatlin." Say that it's not just by metatlin. He's actually saying that it even applies by metatlin, which you would have thought by metatlin you need a higher level of gesturing because that's something that, for example, that he could have gotten through Yerusha. It's almost similar to the case of when someone was pekech and then he became a cherish, where then they can't divorce through gesturing. That's the chiddush that we would have thought that metatlin would not work. That was saying that it even works by metatlin, but culture came for sure it would work by getting that all you need is mouthing the words, which is kaifetz. Now the Mishnah said the second halacha was hapu'utais mechtan mekach u'memkar memker, regarding young children, when they buy something, it's a valid purchase. When they sell something, it's a valid sale. By metatlin, when it's regarding movable items. Now the Gemara says, ba'ad kama, until what age? How old does a child, obviously if a two-year-old comes and does, it's not going to be valid. How old does a child have to be qualified for this rabbinic halacha of tikkun olam? So machvi Rav Yehuda l'Rav Yitzchak b'reis, so Rav Yehuda gestured towards his son Rav Yitzchak, which was kevar shiz, kevar shev, like how old his son was, which is around 6 or 7. Rav Kahanam, he says a little bit older, kevar shev, kevar tamni, around 7 or 8. Rav Masnitutan, in the b'reis, we learned a little bit older, kevar tesha, kevar eser, around 9 and 10. Now the Gemara actually says, v'lei pligi, these three opinions are not in disagreement. Kol chad v'chad lefichur, for each one according to his intelligence, meaning it's depending on the child. If the child is a very cunning and crafty and intelligent young child, then he could be as young as 6 or 7. If he's not so much, then it's 7 or 8. And if he's not so much, if he's really not that smart, then it would be around 9 and 10. That would be an age where generally a child will finally be understanding what he's doing, and then the tikkun olam will be valid for the sale. Now the Gemara's time of mind, what's the reason for this rabbinic halacha of tikkun olam, of that by young children their what they do in purchases is valid? So Amar Baba, Bar Yaakov, Rabbi Yechon, Meshum, Kedei Chayev, is, as we said, for the halacha of cheresh, is that they could be able to survive, because if what he sells is not a sale, then no one's going to buy from him and no one's going to sell him because it's not valid. So therefore, for him to be able to survive, that's why they made this halacha. Now the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Malachim Beis, which is by Yehu, and the reason why they're bringing in this pasuk is because it's another halacha from the same Amori that we just mentioned from Rabbi Yaakov in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, that the pasuk says V'yoyma la'asher amaltacha, that he said to the one who is on the maltacha, Hoytze levush l'chol ovdi abal. So the one who's on maltacha, he says, take out clothing for those who worship the Baal. So my maltacha, what is maltacha? So again, it's from the same Amori, Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Yechanan. It's davar hanimlo v'nimtach. The word meltacha has mem lamed, which is nimlo, something that's rolled, and has nimtach at the end of the word, which is something that's stretched. So it's a reference to linen garments, which their threads are stretched through rolling with between the fingers and by stretching it when they're coming to sew it. So that's a reference to the meltacha. Now, a related discussion to linen garments, to the fact that it's rolled and then stretched. So Kiyasa Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came on Rabbi Yechanan, he said in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, Shigur le Bunyim ben Nunyim le Rebbe. Bunyim, the son of Nunyim, who was a wealthy Jew, sent to Rebbe Sivni, V'chemis, Salsla, Umalmala, which are four types of expensive linen garments, which are very thin and of high quality. Now, Sivni, V'chemis, they sent to Rebbe a garment the size of his measurements, but when you fold it up, it was kamguzu upalge damguzu. It came to the size of like a nut and a half. That's how small it was, because it was such a fine fabric. When you fold it up, it folded up to so small. And salsla umalmala, those two were kapistika upalge depiska, came to the size when you folded it up to an acorn and a half, which Rashi says that's the type of food that swine eat. Again, because it was such a high quality, when you fold it up, it comes to very small. Now, again, and the Gemara says, my malmala. This one of the four types of linen garments, why was it called malmala? So again, for the same reason, it's davar hanimlal v'nimtach. It's something that's rolled and that it gets stretched. Again, that's a reference to linen garments. Now, the Gemara turns to the previous subject, where it was talking about the sale and the purchase of a pu'utis, of a young child. So the Gemara has betu'usan, and the error, the margin of error regarding the purchases of a young child, ad kama, until how much is a margin of error that will say that it's not a valid sale and that the sale will have to be void. So Amar Biyuna, Rabbi Zeira says, ad shtus kegadol, up until a sixth, meaning just like an adult, we made the same halachas for the minor, meaning up until a sixth, the purchaser will have acquired what he did, but he'll have to return what's called the inah, which is the overpricing or the underpricing that's regarding the sale. And if it's more than the sixth of a differential regarding how much the price should go for, then it's what's called batel mekach, then the sale is going to be void. Essentially, we made the same halachas of inah for a child as an adult. Now, Abaya asked, matnasei mai, what's the halacha by a movable item if a child gifts something to another person? In other words, as we said, the reason why we even made this halacha was because of kedei chayiv, that he could survive. So that sounds like something that should only apply to something that for him to buy and to sell so that he can get by. But regarding gifts, maybe not. Or do we say that no, his gift is also a gift because there's a reason why he's giving this gift to that person, because this guy is doing him favors. So obviously he would want, and it's also kedei chayiv for him to be able to give gifts to people. So it's actually machloek is Rav Yehima Omer, he says, Ein matnas matana. No, for gifts, we never applied this halacha of pu'utais. Omer bar Rav Ashi, he says, no, matnas matana, his gift is a gift, again, because there is reason for kedei chayiv, even for his giving gifts. Now, the Gemara tells us that Avchuha, the Bnei Yeshiva, those who are learning in the Yeshiva, made a mistake, and they changed the attribution of the opinions of Mabar Rav Ashi and of Rav Yehima regarding who was it that said it is a gift or not. And v'shadru l'kamei de Rav Mordechai, and they had sent the question to Rav Mordechai to ask, who's the halacha like? So Amal Lahem, he said to them, in way of answering the question, that saying, you guys got it mixed up, it's not Mabar Rav Ashi how you said that his matana is not a matana, but rather they said, zilu amru l'bar mar, go tell the son of Mar, who, meaning he was telling to the son of his Rebbe, because Rav Mordechai was a student of Rav Ashi, Lav Hachi Havu Uvda, wasn't this the incident? He was coming to illustrate that the Bnei Yeshiva had made a mistake. Wasn't that your father had said But rather, as our Gemara quotes it, that he said that the gifting of the child is a gift. And that's how it sounds like he was saying the halacha is, that there was such an incident, ki haba koi mar, that when the master, meaning my Rebbe Rav Ashi, was chad kara a'ara v'chad kari a'darga, he had one foot on the floor and he had one foot on the steps that go up to the upper story in the Beis Medrash. V'amar nalei matnas emai, and I asked him, what's the halacha regarding the child if it gives a gift to a person? V'amalon, he said to us, as our Gemara quotes, not like how the Bnei Yeshiva had mixed it up, matnas le matana, his gifting is a gift, and he qualified echas matnas shchivmera v'achas matnas bari, whether it's a gift that he's giving as a dying child, or whether it's a gift that he's giving as a healthy child, achas matana maruba v'achas matana etzes, whether he's giving a small gift, a large gift, doesn't make a difference. The halacha pu'utas applies not just to mekech hamemker, but it also applies to matana. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, very much related to all the previous Mishnahs of Tikkun Olam, but here it's a related concept, not of Tikkun Olam, but rather of Darchei Shalom. The before was regarding how to make sure the world runs smoothly and effectively. Now we're talking about for things to prevent a discord and disagreement, but rather what's called Darchei Shalom, to promote ways of peace, to prevent situations that could be create machlokes. So the Mishnah tells us, Eilu Dvarim Amru Bnei Darchei Shalom. The following things were said because of the ways of peace. Kain Kairi Rishon, when it comes to getting Aliyah to increase a turn in the shul, the first one who is called up, who gets what's called Aliyah, is the Kain. V'achrav Levi, then comes the Levi. V'achrav Yisrael, then comes the non-Kain and Levi, what's called the Yisrael. And the reason for this is Bnei Darchei Shalom, that this shouldn't come to fighting. The Rabbanan made it to be that order, because since it's what's called a Takana Rabbanan, so no one's going to argue anymore and say, oh, I want the first Levi, I want the first Levi. You can't argue anymore. There's nothing to talk about. We know the Kayin, then the Levi, and then comes the Yisrael. Moreover, Ma'arvin Bebayis Yashin. And the halacha of Eruv Chetzeres is that an Eruv of food is put into one of the people's, of the members of that courtyard's house. So the people in that courtyard, who they commonly and customarily always would put the Erev of the courtyard in one of the houses, the halacha is you don't switch the place to put into another house. Rather, you put in what's called Bayis Yashan, the old house, the house that you always have been putting the Erev into. And the reason is Bnei Darchei Shalom, because of ways of peace, where, again, the Gemara will explain on Samech Amud Beis specifically what the Darchei Shalom that applies to this halacha. So continue on Amud Beis, where the Mishnah continues and says, Barishu Karav La'ama. A pit that's near the stream, near the canal. And that is, there would be a canal of water that would bring the water from the river to the fields. Now, they would commonly make pits near their fields, which is near that canal. The reason being is because if, let's say, that canal dries up, then they would have water to fill up from the pit, which is in that pit, and then they could use it to water their fields. Now, moreover, is that they would then take and these irrigation canals, they would take from that canal and draw from it to that pit until it would be filled up. Now, the Chacham were Mesakin, again, because of Darchei Shalom, that Mismali Rishon, that the first one who would fill up his pit for his fields would be the upper pits that are by the opening of the canal, meaning the beginning of where the canal comes from the river, that first where it starts its path, the one who has his pit there, he can go fill up his pit first, and then the ones lower down from the canal. Now, the understanding of this is, why can they do it at the same time? Is because when they would fill up their pit, you had to first stop up the canal to then be able to channel the water into your pit, and only then would they open it up that it could continue. That's why you needed to do this halacha of that they could close it up, so they fill up first, and then the lower ones get it. And Mnei Darchei Shalom, the reason was for because ways of peace, so that there shouldn't be disagreement between them, because he's going to say, I want to stuff up the canal that I can fill up my pit for it. And he's saying, I want to do it first. So since the Rabbanu were masakinly, this is what they instituted, even though it's not really the halacha like this. So, but now they're avoiding disagreement, and it's just going to go in the order that we have organized, and no one's going to argue on the rules. Now Mishnah continues and says, Mitzudais chayiv o'efes v'dagim. The traps of wild animals and the birds and the fish, which biblically, as long as it didn't come to the hand of the one who's trapping the animal, it's not considered theft. Now, the Gemara will qualify this and explain this halacha on Samach Aleph and Aleph, that we're talking about traps that don't have any concave, doesn't have any cavity. So, although it's in the trap, but it can't be kainit, acquired because of your keli, because although it's going into your vessel, that itself should acquire it, but since it doesn't have any teich, it doesn't have any opening, it doesn't have anything that it goes into, it's only on top of it, that wouldn't acquire it because of kelim. So essentially, really, the halacha should be that it's not yours yet and someone could go ahead and grab it. But they said that yesh behen mishum gezel, that it's considered theft if someone steals from someone else's traps, memnei darkei shalom, because of ways of peace. Now, Rabbi Yisim, he actually says gezel gomer. He disagrees. He says it's considered complete theft. Now, the Gemara actually explains on Samach Aleph Min Aleph that when he says it's complete theft, obviously, biblically, it's not. Because it's not. The guy never acquired it. The kli doesn't have any teich. He means it's considered complete theft on the rabbinic level. Now, the reason for this is that Rabbi Yisi holds, as all these halachas that we're going to quote that he holds Gezel Gomer, is that because of Darkei Shalom, what the rabbis did is that they made something that he did not merit to have a full acquisition as if he acquired it. So it's as if you acquired it, so then on a rabbinic level we consider it as you're stealing. Tanakama doesn't hold that it's considered Gezel Gomer. They said it's like you're stealing, but it's not like you really acquired it even on a rabbinic level, and that's their disagreement regarding this halacha, if it's just like you're stealing, or no, it's you're really stealing on a rabbinic level because the rabbis actually acquired it to that person, even though he didn't biblically acquire it yet. The Mishnah continues and says, Mitzias Chereshayt V'Katan, regarding a deaf mute or mentally deranged or a minor, if they find a lost object, Yesh Behem Mishum Gezel, it's going to be considered theft if you take it away from that child. Memnei Darkei Shalom, again, although a child we're that below that age that doesn't have any halacha of acquiring it, but because of the ways of peace, we'll consider it as if it's theirs and you can't just take it away from them. Rabbi Yisim, again, he says Gezel Gomer. It's actually considered complete theft, rabbinically, again, because the rabbis have given that on the rabbinic level as if the child already acquired it. Mishnah says, Ani Hamanakif, regarding a pauper that's cutting off the olives, Beresh Hazayas, on the top of an olive tree, where he has the rights to go ahead and take those fruits which are for the poor people, Masha Tachtav Gezel, what falls now below him, is considered theft, Memnei Darkei Shalom, because of ways of peace, where although he hasn't acquired it, he just cut it down and fell down, it's not his, but what's below him, what fell below, is considered theft if someone now is going to go ahead and grab away where this guy went through all the effort and get it down from the top of the tree, again, because of Darkei Shalom. And Rabbi Yisim, he says it's Gezel Gomer, so it's considered complete theft, rabbinically. And finally, the Mishnah says, Ein memachin biyad ani oivdi kechavim. We don't protest regarding non-Jewish paupers when they come beleket shichlu pei, meaning all the poor people that are going through all the fields, they're allowed to after all the they finish the processing in the field, so they can take the gleanings that are left over, or the sheaves, the those bundles which are left over, or peya, which is the corn of the fields. Now the other vagrants, the non-Jewish poor people that they might hang out with the Jewish poor people, they see, oh, they're going into the fields and come with them. We don't protest. Because ways of peace, we don't protest with the non-Jews. Now the Gemara asks, regarding the opening halacha of our mission that spoke about, that the order is Kohen Levi Yisrael, the Gemara asks, from where do we know this, that it's that order, that the Kohen is greater, then comes Levi, and then comes the Yisrael. So Amr of Masni says, the Amakra, because the Pasuk says in the Varm, says, V'yichtev Moshe es ha-Torah zeis, that Moshe ben wrote this Torah, V'yidnu el ha-Kehanim b'nei Levi, and he gave it to the Kehanim, the sons of Levi. Now the question is, Atu ano le'yedanu de Kehanim b'nei Levi, don't we know that Kehanim are the sons of Levi? I mean, we know that there was Sheva Levi, and from the descendants was Amram, who had a son Moshe, who continued the Levim, and then there was Aaron, who became the Kehanim. Why do we have to say Kehanim b'nei Levi? Ella, rather, the Pasuk's teaching this concept, Kayin Bereisha Vahadur Levi. In other words, when it says Vayitna, that Moshe Rabbeinu gave the Torah to the Kehanim, meaning he gave to the Kehanim to read first, and then in the Pasuk comes B'nai Levi, then comes the Levim, and then obviously then comes the Yisrael. Rizla Nafcha Amar Mehachi, he brings a different Pasuk in Devarim. It says, V'nikshu HaKehanim B'nai Levi, that the Kehanim, the sons of Levi, they came near. So again, the question is, Atu anan lo yedin in dekanim b'nei Levi, and don't we know that dekanim are the sons of Levi? Ella, rather, it's come to teach this idea that kayin b'reish of hadu Levi. First comes a kayin, and then comes a Levi. So hakahanim, comma, then b'nei Levi. Vashyam Mahochi, he brings a pasuk in Divrei Yom Aleph. It says that b'nei Amram were Aaron u'Moshe, v'yibadil Aaron, and then Aaron was separated from the Levim, so the Levim are greater than the rest. Aaron was separated, Lakadisha Kodesh Kodeshim, to sanctify him, the holiest of the holies. So we see that the Kayin Aaron is greater than the Levi, which is Moshe, and then is the rest of the Jewish people. Reb Chiya bar Abba Mahachi brings a pasuk in Vayikra that says v'kidashtei, that you should sanctify him, meaning the Kayin. Now the reason is the pasuk there continues in Chaf Alef Ches. It says ki es lechem elekecha hu makriv, because he sacrifices the karbonis to Hashem, where kadosh yialach, that he should be holy for you. Because actually, as Rashi al Torah says, that the primary drasha that the Gemara is bringing over here is actually not from the word v'kidashtei, but rather actually that kadosh yialach, he should be holy to you. What does it mean that you should treat the kohen holy, he should be holy for you? It means l'chol davar shebekdusha, for any matters of sanctity, which is getting an aliyah by the Torah, he comes first. As the Gemara brings that Tanna b'Rabbi Shmuel was taught in the Braisa of the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, and it says v'kidashtei, that you should sanctify him, l'chol davar shebekdusha, for any matter of sanctity, which is l'ftoyach rishon, he's the one that opens up for us, meaning for any honorable thing, whether it comes to Torah, as we're talking about over here, getting the aliyah, or whether in the yeshiva that he talks first, or levarach rishon, to make the bracha first, when it's by a meal, or v'litil manu yafa rishon, or to take, when a kayin is splitting a meal with the Yisrael, then after they split it evenly, then the Yisrael tells to the kayin, you choose and you take first which one you want, first you take the primary choice. Again, this is how we honor a kohen, so we see the kohen comes first, then the Levi, then the Yisrael. Now, based on this, what the Gemara just said, so Amalei Abayla Rav Yosef, Abaya asked Rav Yosef, so why does our Mishnah say regarding the Aliyahs that kohen Levi Yisrael is b'mnei darkei shalom, is because of ways of peace, that it's like a rabbinic injunction? Dairaisi, it's a biblical. We just brought all these pesukim as sources that we see that biblically we see that a kohen has to be lifted if berishin, and then Levi, then Yisrael. So Amalei Rav Yosef answered to Abaya, he says, you're right. The Torah tells us to do it like this. Why? The Mishnah is explained. Why does the Torah tell us that it should be like this? Is because of Darkei Shalom. Now, that Abaya asks, what do we call HaTorah Kula Namim Mnei Darkei Shalom? The whole Torah is because of ways of peace. Why do you think Hashem told us to do this Torah, the 613 mitzvahs? Every mitzvah brings us to Shalom in the world. Like it says in the Pasuk in Mishlei. It says, Derecheha Darkei Noyim. Her ways are ways of peace. Are ways of sweetness, of pleasantness. The chol nisi v'seh shalom, and the whole paths are paths of peace. So don't tell me that this halacha is mnei darkei shalom. If that's the case, every mitzvah is really, if it's biblical, is darkei shalom. So elam abayi, rather abayi says that this that the Mishnah says is because of darkei shalom, is l'kedemar. It's coming to teach us the halacha of the master. That's a reference to his rebbe that abayi was quoting from, which was Rabbi Bar Nachmani. The Tanya, like learning the Braisa, and it's Rabbah's halacha on that Braisa that's being illustrated according to Abaya in our Mishnah. The Braisa says, which talks about halacha, that it's appropriate by eating, by a meal. So it says, Shnayim amtinin zel lezebekara. Two people should wait for each other when they're eating from a platter. So if they're sharing from this platter, one guy shouldn't be grabbing everything before the other one, he should wait for the other one. But shleisha eim amtinin, when it's three people, then they don't have to wait for the other one. Now, another halacha is habitzeya, when the person is breaking the bread. For example, the balabais, the homeowner, who he's making the hamaitzi on the bread. So even if he's a minor, but if he's the one that's breaking the big challah, hu poshed yadei tchila, he's the one that first takes his piece of bread to dip it into the plate, to dip, he goes first, because he's the habitzeya. Now, bad v'imbalach le'kavid l'rabbi. But if he wants to apportion honor to his rebbe, who's his master, is there by the table, or the mishagodman, or someone that's greater than him, harashus b'yadei. On that, the Braisa says that he's permitted to do. Although the halacha is he goes first, he could honor someone greater than him. Now, v'ama maralah, and that rabbi said regarding that halacha, he qualified and says, let loyishana. We didn't learn this, that a person who has the right to do this first, that he can then apportion his honor to his Rebbe, to honor his Rebbe, that was only like the Braita says, Ela Besuda, only by a meal. Aval, but regarding, let's say, the halacha of our Mishnah, of Kriyas HaTorah, but based on Knesset, in the Shul, then, Loi, there, a Kohen is not allowed to allow a Levi go first and take the first Aliyah, neither is a Levi allowed to take his Aliyah and give it to Yisrael, because the Asul Le'insoye, because it's going to come to create arguments. Because we don't want other people to come and argue and not to say, wait a second, it doesn't have to be the kohen. I was there and I saw a kohen let someone else go. So I'm the greatest. I want to go first. So that's what Abaye is saying. That's what the Mishnah is saying. That this that a kohen has the first aliyah and Levi the second one and then Yisrael, which, yes, that's, as we brought from Sukkim, that's the order of the Torah. But what the Darkei Shalom is telling us, that he's not allowed to now give up that biblical halacha to give kavod to someone else, let's say to his Rebbe, that's because of Darkei Shalom. Because once you start changing it, then other people are going to start jumping in and say, wait a second, how about me? So, b'nei Darkei Shalom, we don't allow to be chilek kavod tamid l'rabbi, and it has to maintain, as the biblical halacha is, a kohen, Levi, and then Yisrael. Now, however, Amar Masna, he says, had the Amr Bebesek Nesis Lay, this, that what we just said, that however, regarding Aliyah in Shul, that there we don't allow for the Talmud to be chaylik covered Talmud l'Rabbi, or for anyone to give cover to a greater person, Loyamorin Ella B'Shabbos V'Yom Tov. He says that's only on Shabbos and Yom Tov. The Shechichi Rabbim, when the Shul is packed, many people are there, and then there's going to come to disagreement. But on the Monday and the Thursday, where, you know, it's just an Aliyah, so to speak, where at least there's not that many people there, that's not going to create such a problem if even the Kohen does allow a Yisrael, let's say his Rebbe or someone greater than him, to get that Aliyah. Now, but the Gemara asks, on going back to what Rabbah had said, that Ini, is that really so? That this halacha that you're not ever allowed to, at least the way Rabbah had said it, give over an Aliyah from a Kohen to a Yisrael, even if he's greater? But the Gemara asks, but Rav Huna, who is a Yisrael, Kari B'Kahani B'Shabbos V'Yom Tovim. So that's going to be difficult, even according to Rav Masna, that even on Shabbos and Yom Tov, he got an Aliyah by the Aliyah of Kohen. Now, the problem is, obviously, that they were chaylik covered to the great Rav Huna, but you just said that we can never do that because of Darkei Shalom. So now the Gemara says, no, it's not difficult. Shani Rav Huna, was different, and he was what's called an extenuating circumstance of an exception. The Afilu Rav Ami, Rav Asi. Because even the great Rav Ami, Rav Asi, who kahani chashiv de Eretz Yisrael, who were the most respected kahanim in Eretz Yisrael, mechav hava kaifalei, they were subservient to Rav Huna. And therefore, yes, although generally you can't make the exceptions, but Rav Huna, if he's going to get the first aliyah and not the kohen, it's not going to what's be called asalan suya. No one else is going to come and disagree and say, oh, I want it. Rav Huna, everyone knows, is a different, and that's why that was an allowed exception. Continuing on these halachas of Kriya Satayran regarding the order, so Omar Abaye says, Nektina, we have a tradition from our fathers that if ain't shem kohen, if there's no kohen there in shul, nispar de chavila. Which means to say that the rope, the knot, has been undone. What does that mean? So Rashi actually brings two different interpretations. Either it means that now the Levi has lost his honor of getting the second aliyah, because since the rope has been undone, so he doesn't get any aliyah now because there's no kayin, so they're going to call up Rishon, some Yisrael, now the Levi doesn't get Shani. That's how he brings from his Rebbe and from Rabbi Yitzchok ben Yehuda, and it's brought like this in the Siddur of Rav Amram. But he said he heard from the students of his teacher, Rabbi Yitzchok HaLevi, who say over in his name that actually what it means that Nispar da Chavil is now there's no order whatsoever. Meaning there's no necessity of having the Levi before Yisrael, and whoever wants could come first, but not that necessarily for sure the Levi doesn't get that second Aliyah. But Amar Abaye, another halacha of Abaye, is Naktina, we have a tradition that Ein Sham Levi, if there's no Levi over there, then Kari Kayin, then a Kayin gets that Shani, that second Aliyah, in place of a Levi. That the Gemara asked, is that so? But for Amr Rabbi Yechon said, Kayin achar Kayin lo yikra. The first Aliyah a Kayin gets. Now the Shani should not be another Kayin. Why? Mishum Pugamay Shal Rishon, because of the deficiency it might create in the first Kayin. Because people are going to say, wait a second, why is next Aliyah a Kayin? Must be the first guy was not really Kayin, it was some type of mistake. Which the Gemara later on is going to ask and say, wait a second, they'll know when they come to the end of the Aliyahs. Let's say they see the Shvi and then this Mafter, and they realize that the guy first Aliyah was considered a valid Aliyah. What's the problem by thinking that there's some type of Pagam? Obviously, there's no Pagam. Obviously, there are two Kanim that the Gemara is shortly going to address. So, but you're not supposed to have a Kayin after a Kayin, and neither Levi Acha Levi Lo Yikari. You're not supposed to have a Levi and then another Levi after that Levi, and that's Mishum Pagam Shneim. That's because of a deficiency you might create in either one of them. Because people are not going to know which one is the problematic Levi. Because they're going to say, wait a second, must be the first guy was not really a Levi. That's why they did it over and had another Levi. Or they're going to say, the first guy was a Levi. Must be that second guy is not really a Levi. Must be Yisrael. Now the Gemara later on is going to ask that, why don't we say the same thing by the Kayin, that it's also Pagam Shnehem. Where they're going to say that either the first guy is not a Kayin, as we said before, or actually, maybe the second guy is not a Kohen, that maybe he's a Levi. Because why is he getting the second Aliyah? Must be he's not a Kohen, he's a Levi. But one thing that the Gemara is asking is that one thing that we see is that you're not supposed to have a kohen take the Levi's aliyah, because you can't have a kohen after a kohen. So why is Abai saying that if there's no Levi that you give the aliyah to a kohen, you can't have a kohen after the first kohen? So the Gemara says, no, ki kamrina, when did Abai mean that if there's no Levi, then the kohen gets the aliyah? It means ba'isai kohen. That same kohen, who got rishon, he goes and now he recites the second aliyah in place of a Levi, he gets sheni also. So therefore there's no pagam because it's the same person. Now the Gemara goes, and now that we mentioned this halacha of Rabbi Yochanan to ask on Abai, which was just answered, now the Gemara goes back to clarify, as we alluded to some of these questions, that Maishno Levi Acha Levi, why did Rabbi Yochanan differentiate when he mentioned that you shouldn't have a Levi get an aliyah after a Levi, let's say getting shlishi after sheni, the ikka pagam shneyim, because that might create a deficiency in both of them, because we don't know, now they're going to start thinking maybe either one of them has the problem. Now, why did we say it's pagam shneyim? The Amri Chad Minayr Lav Levi, because we're going to say that must be one of them is not a Levi, because we know that only one person gets the Aliyah of Levi. So now that another one gets after the first one, I don't know, but it wasn't one of them, must have been not a Levi. But then Kain Acha Kain Nami, then why didn't you say the same thing when you have a Kain and another one getting the Aliyah afterwards, also a Kain? Amri Chad Minayr Lav Kain, we should do the same thing. We should say that must be one of them is not a Kain. In other words, why did Rabbi Yechon say that you can't have a kohen after a kohen, because then we're going to say that the first guy must have been not good? Why necessarily the first one? Why can't it be that maybe the second one's not good? That maybe he's not really a kohen, maybe he's a Levi? So the Gemara answers that no, because kohen de muchzik lombavu de hai sheni de kohenu. The reason why we didn't say that maybe the second guy wasn't a kohen, is because it's talking about a case where it was already established, everyone knows that the father of this second guy who's getting the aliyah, who his father was a kohen. So you can't say that maybe he's a Levi because everybody knows his father was a famous kohen. So it must be if Shani's going to a kohen, and we know he's not a Levi, so it must be that the first guy must have been not a kohen, because why would we give him kohen to someone who's getting Shani? Must be that we have to do it over. Now that the Gemara asks, if that's the case, so then you have to say that that's the same qualification of the parallel halacha when it talks about Levi. So hachinami, so therefore then the case of Levi Acha Levi must be told about, just like you're saying by Kain Acha Kain, is the Muchzik Lombavu the Hayishani the Levihu. So it must be that the father of that second guy, meaning the guy, let's say he's getting Shlishi, who's coming after the first Levi who got Shani, must be that it's also told about that we know his father is also a Levi. So why are we saying that, oh, there it's maybe Pagama Bishneha? We're going to say that we don't know which Levi has the problem. What do you mean? How can you say that second Levi, people are going to think that maybe he's not really a Levi? You just said that the case of the second guy getting the aliyah after the similar first guy is muchzik that his father is that. So just like by the kohen, you said it's muchzik that his father was a kohen. That's why he said the problem is only by the first one. Here also, the second Levi is also muchzik that his father is a Levi. So why would we suspect that there would be a pagam for the second one? It should be only for the first one, like we said by the kohen. So Ella, rather, obviously, the Gemara says that why are you saying that it's going to be a begam, possibly not only by the first Levi, but maybe it's a problem with the second Levi, even though we know his father was a Levi? Because Amri, we're going to say, oh, maybe, yeah, the father was a Levi. But Mamzeres Oynesina Nosiv, maybe the father married someone inappropriate for him. He married a Mamzeres, an illegitimate, a woman that's from an illegitimate parent, meaning from such a marriage, which was forbidden. Or he married one of the Nesinim, which is what's this people of called the Givonim, that David Melch made a gzera that they're not allowed to marry into the Jewish people. Upasli Lazari, and maybe that's how he actually was machal. He invalidated his own children, this father who was a Levi, from having the sanctity of Leviah, and therefore we make his child who's getting this aliyah into a Yisrael apostle, and that's why he's getting shlishi. Maybe that's what happened. Meaning we know his father was a Levi, but there's someone already got Levi. Now he's getting the Leah afterwards, he's getting shlishi. Maybe he's really a Yisrael. How's he Yisrael? Because his father married a Mamzeres or a Nesina. So that's why you're saying that even though it's Muslim that his father was a Levi, it could be what Rabbi Yochanan is calling a Pugam of Shneam. But then the Gemara goes back. If that's the case, then Hochenami. Then the same thing is also by the second Kayan. We should also then say, Amri Gurusha Chalutzanas. Why are we saying it's only a problem for the first kohen? Because why are you having a second kohen who we know his father is a kohen after the first one? Must be something wrong with the first one. No. Maybe there's something wrong also with the second kohen. We don't know which one. Because maybe his father married a divorcee or a chalutza woman that had chalitza dantar. where there the halacha is va'achli lazari, and therefore he profaned his children from having the sanctity of kuhuna, and that's why he's like Yisrael right now. So maybe that's why. So why are we saying there that it's only pegam rishon? Maybe there it's also pegam shneim. That's what the Gemara answers that no. The discrepancy is because by kohen he gets the first aliyah. When you have a second kohen come in the place of Levi, you can't say that second kohen has a pegam, and although we know his father was a kohen because maybe he's a chal, because maybe his father married a grusha chalut. So no, you can't say that, because if you would entertain to say that he's a chol, well then saif, then at the end of the day, Levi mi kohava, would he be a Levi? He wouldn't get the aliyah that goes for a Levi. He would get maybe two aliyahs later, not the next one. He would get shlishi, not Levi. So obviously, since his father was a kohen, and he's getting the second aliyah, must be he's not a chol, because he's not a Levi either, and therefore, the only problem that there's going to be a pagam for is going to be for the first guy who got the aliyah, who's the first kohen, because why are we having a kohen come after him, who we know is not a Levi, and therefore he's obviously not pagam of chol, so he's for sure a kohen, and therefore we would come to suspect regarding the first one, must have been he's not a real kohen, and that's why the second guy had the second aliyah, and that's what Rabbi Yochanan said, you can't have kohen, achar kohen, because of the pagam of the rishon. Now the Gemara asks, ulama, when we said that they're going to create a pagam, who is it that's going to create a begam in that first kohen? In other words, they see he gets rishon. Oh, yamad kohen. They call up rishon. They call up this person. Oh, okay, he must be a kohen. Then they call up another person who we know for sure is a kohen. He gets a second aliyah. Now he's not a Levi, and he's not a Yisrael because he's not getting shlishi. So it must have been that first guy was a mistake. He's not really a kohen. Who is going to suspect that? As the Gemara explains, Eli Yishman, if it's for people that sit through the rest of Kriyas HaTorah until they wrap up and roll up the Sefer Torah, but they see that the first kohen, the first person who got rishon, was a kohen, because they see that they know there's supposed to be seven aliyahs in Shabbos, and all there ends up being is seven. They don't end up having eight, because if the first guy was a mistake, then the second guy who was the first guy who was the kohen, then they would have gone one aliyah longer, and they didn't. So who's creating a pagam in the first guy? Now the Gemara concludes, rather it's for those who don't have patience, who don't end up sitting through Kriyas HaTorah, they don't wait and they leave early, they don't wait around to see that it ends up being, oh, the right amount of aliyahs, it must be, oh, he really is a kohen, they're going to leave quickly in the middle, and they're going to see that a kohen is getting sheni, which obviously kohen doesn't get sheni, and neither is he a pagam, a chol, so therefore they're going to start thinking, that must have been that guy is not really a kohen, so to avoid that problem, that's where Rabbi Yochanan says that kohen achar kohen lo yikra.